16-year-old Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg and the Fridays for Future movement received the Amnesty International 2019 Ambassador of Conscience Award in Washington, D.C. on Monday. Earlier this month, Thunberg arrived in New York City after sailing the Atlantic on a carbon emissions-free vessel with no bathroom and no shower. She attracted international attention last year when she started missing school on Fridays to protest against political inaction on climate change.
Art thieves in the UK have stolen a $5 million golden toilet when it was put on display at Britain's Blenheim Palace for an art exhibit. Dubbed America by Italian artist Maurizio Cattelan, it was on display at New York's Guggenheim Museum 2 years ago. Its removal caused extensive flooding. It's said to have been stolen sometime before 5 a.m. on Saturday. One man has been arrested in connection with the theft, but the toilet's whereabouts are unknown.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson received a frosty reception in Luxembourg on Monday as he arrived for talks with his counterpart Xavier Bettel. Protesters gathered outside the Luxembourg Prime Minister's office, holding anti-Brexit signs and chanting anti-Brexit slogans. Such was the noise that Johnson then cancelled a joint press conference, leaving Bettel to speak to reporters beside an empty podium.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's September the 17th, and it's 5:11 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day underway. We've got lots to cover this morning. An update on the GM strike coming this morning. Dale Buss will join us from Michigan shortly to talk a little bit about the strike and what's happening behind the scenes there. A little bit later in the program, if picking apples is in your future for the fall, maybe an autumn trip to, let's say, Michigan or Wisconsin or somewhere else in Illinois, be on the alert. There is apparently a lot of damage to the apple crop this year. And we'll have a conversation about that a little bit later on this morning. Alexia Elahalde Ruiz, a food reporter at Chicago Tribune, will join us at about 5:38 this morning. She's done some reporting on this. You'll be surprised to see the different varieties of apples that you won't be able to pick this fall, at least not in big numbers. Also this morning, we'll keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the 5 o'clock hour right here on 720 WGN. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning on Wall Street. Investors keeping a close eye on the oil trading. Looking forward to the Fed's meeting that begins today, a two-day meeting that'll likely end with the setting of rates tomorrow. This morning, a little weakness heading to the open on Wall Street. Dow futures are off about 0.25%. Same story at the NASDAQ. S&P futures are down fractionally this morning as well. As we look around the rest of the globe, markets in London are higher. Everything else in Europe is lower. In Germany, off by nearly a third. And in Asia, markets are mixed. The Nikkei back to work today, ending the day up just a fraction. And Hong Kong off nearly 334 points, about 1.25%. In China, off by nearly 1.75%. Oil in the U.S. is trading at $61.93 a barrel, up 93 cents. As we begin this morning, of course, we're watching oil prices. They're down just a little bit since the weekend attack on that Saudi processing and oil fields. But still, prices higher than last week. West Texas Intermediate crude has dropped a little bit since the weekend, as we mentioned. International benchmark crude is off a little as well, but at $68.29 a barrel. The attack on Saturday ramped up uncertainty in the market. Investors wonder how long it will take the Saudis to get back to full capacity after the attacks that cut production by more than half. They're also worried about how vulnerable Saudi facilities are to another attack. Real estate business slash tech company WeWork is likely to postpone its initial public offering at least until mid-October. The company primarily flips long-term leases to short-term clients. Its IPO is being put on hold after investors raised questions about the actual value of the company, which WeWork had pegged at about $47 billion. The FCC has approved Nexstar's deal to acquire Tribune Media for $6.4 billion. Nexstar says the deal will create the nation's biggest local TV broadcaster and local media company. The FCC's approval yesterday requires Nexstar to sell 21 of its local TV stations. Nexstar and Tribune Media expected to close the deal soon. Tribune Media is the parent company of WGN Radio and WGN TV. Let's begin this morning with the GM strike. General Motors and United Automobile Workers continue to have discussions as the nationwide strike enters a second day. Negotiations reportedly were tense yesterday as the two sides are at odds over wages and health care. Let's bring in Dale Buss from Michigan this morning for an update on not only the strike, but what's going on behind the scenes. Dale, good morning. Welcome back to WGN.
Good morning. Thanks, Steve.
Have you been out on the picket line? What's the feel over there?
Well, I have not been out on the picket lines. Unfortunately, it's not cool enough that anybody has to be lighting any barrel fires to stay warm. It's a curious, weird kind of strike. I mean, I've covered off and on the UAW and auto companies for since the 80s, and this is kind of the strangest labor environment that I've really encountered. It's hard to kind of cipher exactly what's going on here. I think what it boils down to is the reason that the UAW struck GM has maybe more to do with internal union dynamics than anything going on even at GM or in the broader economy. There's a big federal corruption probe going on of the UAW, including some of its top officials, including one who is very closely tied to the new president, Gary Jones. And it's hard not to believe that there's sort of a wag the dog thing going on here. That movie several years ago where Dustin Hoffman was the president. I think it was Dustin Hoffman. He was the president. He started a war, fabricated a war to cover up a sex scandal. And so it's hard not to believe that what is going on here is the UAW leadership says, we got to distract people. We don't want them to focus on this corruption investigation, which has reached the very top of a union that historically has been pretty much free of corruption. Because another reason for believing that is because the General Motors offer that was on the table when the union struck yesterday was pretty generous. I mean, the company pledged to create 5,400 new jobs. They were going to raise base wages. They were even going to increase profit sharing, which in some years has been more than $10,000 a worker. They were going to keep health insurance benefits in place. And over the years, health insurance has been a conflict area between the union and the automakers. And they're even going to throw in an $8,000 bonus for an individual worker to ratify the new contract once it got worked out. And finally, GM said, okay, that plant in Detroit, in the area called Hamtramck, that was one that we decided to close earlier this year, and that President Trump called CEO Mary Barra and said, you really want to do that? We're probably going to keep that open, and we're going to put a new electric truck in there in the next few years. So GM really threw a lot out on the table. It seems like they made public their final proposal because they knew it was a good one. And the union still walked.
Playing devil's advocate here, the union members will tell you it's not hard. It's not very easy to get 50,000 people to walk out on a whim. The idea that they'd be fooled to go out on strike over some sort of internal conflict and not actual issues is a little hard to believe.
Well, yeah, I mean, the union leadership definitely played up the fact that you're kind of using the traditional rhetoric saying that, you know, this is not fair to these hardworking members of the UAW and all that, but they couldn't really trot out anything going on in the negotiations that they were concerned about because GM has addressed pretty much everything that the union leadership said they were concerned about, including healthcare benefits and including the status of those closed plants. So, of course, it's never going to be explicit that that's what's going on, but the UAW rank and file, you know, will follow their leadership, and nobody's going to say this is what's going on. But you know, people who've been watching this for a long time, including me, feel that this is a dynamic at work here, and so likely it's going to be a short strike. There's just not any fundamentals at work here that would suggest there's a reason for a long strike. And if it is just a few weeks, you know, all could end up well in terms of the UAW getting a new contract that it could sell to the membership. You know, GM is losing a few hundred million dollars a week as this goes on, especially because it's got a new pickup, a high profit model, the new Silverado, which is very important to the company. Losing a lot of money, not selling those, not selling their big SUVs, you know, as they start running out of them. So in the long run, it may not be a huge, huge speed bump for the company or the UAW. But we'll see. Things have gone off the tracks before.
Yeah. One of the issues I saw being talked about yesterday, there were some interviews of people on the line talking about this, the temporary workers situation. One guy on the line making the full salary. The other is the temporary worker not making as much, but not really there temporarily. They're just as much as the permanent workers. Has there been some abuse of temporary workers at GM?
Well, there is the allegation that there has been. Temporary workers account for, I think, about 7% of the workforce. So, you know, not a huge, huge part of the operation. And the UAW wants to limit the use of these people even more because, as you mentioned, there is some discrepancy. They get the same wages. But, for example, I mentioned the profit-sharing check, $10,000 a piece in the last few years. The temporary workers are not eligible for those. But see, that's an example. To me, that's the kind of the exception that proves the rule here. This is not an issue that the union is going to go strike, you know, for 3 months over. This is not an issue that, while it might rankle, you know, somebody on the assembly line day to day, this is not something that they're going to give up their pay for a long time because. While they're off on strike, the only income they have is $250 a week in UAW strike benefits, which comes from a fund that now tops, I think, $800 million that the union has for just such occasions. But I guess, as I mentioned, that's an example. If that's one of the big issues, then there's really not a lot of substance behind the frustrations, let's say, in this walkout.
Dale, you mentioned earlier the UAW workers, the strike fund that they have. I'm curious how long GM can go before we might see any impacts of this. What's their inventory like? When will they be affected by a potential walkout?
Well, the inventory overall is in good shape. I think it's at around 77 days. Now, what that means in industry parlance is typically the companies and dealers would like to see about a 60-day supply to ensure the right balance of, you know, models, options, and all that, that consumers have ample choice without the companies carrying too much expensive or dealers carrying too much expensive inventory. So overall, GM is at 77 days, while the industry overall is about 60 days. So it's in decent shape in that regard. Unfortunately, some of its biggest and highest profit models, it's in shorter supply, like the Yukon, the large SUV, which is one of their highest profit vehicles. Aren't many of those around. And so if the strike lasts for more than a few weeks with GM's production shut down, then as a customer, you start going into GM dealerships and you're like, no, you can't get that color. No, you can't get that option or trim package. Starts to frustrate people. So the loss of sales, you know, begins to be material. But if the strike lasts, say, a couple of weeks, GM could pretty easily make up production of all of the, you know, important vehicles in its stable without much of a problem. And in a way, the strike isn't really material to sales of some of the sedans that GM has been trying to phase out over the course of this last year, as the whole industry decides to get out of the sedan business, or at least the Detroit 3.
Remind our listeners that the GM talks, generally it's the first, right, of the group of auto talks with UAW. If they've gone out with GM, what does that say for the rest of the companies that will be negotiating coming up?
Right. Well, the way that this happens is that the UAW, in the course of the talks, decides to target one company where the UAW thinks that the company may be most vulnerable to give it the best deal. So often that has been, say, for example, Chrysler, which over the decades has been, you know, one of the, you know, has been the weakest of the Detroit three. Now that is not the case at all. But in this case, the union in part was responding to pressure from the rank and file because a lot of people are ticked off about GM's decision to close the plant in Detroit, the plant in Lordstown, Ohio, and a couple of other facilities across the country. So the decision was made, let's target GM, and when that happens in that process, basically the other companies stand aside while the union tries to work out a deal with the targeted automaker, and that's what's happened here. And if I might, let me, if I can, just readdress the point about my assertion that it's the corruption investigation of the union leadership that's really at play here. I mean, if you've got a second to let me do that, a few things that work here. One is the UAW historically has been a corruption-free union, not completely free, but the UAW is not and never has been the Teamsters. Walter Reuther, the essentially the founder of a UAW, was really strict about that with his leadership. Through the decades, there has just not been a scandal of the leadership abusing its privileges, you know, something that the rank and file would be aghast at. You know, people like Doug Frazier, who I knew and who led the union in the 80s, were just steadfast about that. And it's had that reputation for a long time. But this corruption investigation that now is broadened by the federal government has revealed all sorts of just unsavory practices, spending on golf courses and bottles of champagne and all sorts of other things by the leadership at meetings and conferences in California. It's just not the kind of stuff you want your membership thinking that you're doing. And another factor at work here is that now Michigan, Indiana, some other strongholds of the UAW are right-to-work states. And so there is a point at which people don't necessarily have to stay in the union if they think it doesn't represent their interests or is not, you know, a savory institution that they want to support. So all that comes together, and what's got to happen in these strike situations is the union leadership doesn't want a long strike either, but they've got to get the membership to the point where they will ratify, they will accept a deal that they work out with the automakers. And so it's got to look like that deal was hard to get. And that's why sometimes a short strike is the best thing in the long run for getting these things ratified. Well, the problem is if you've got a compromised leadership and you're a rank-and-file UAW member, are you going to believe that leadership? You know, are you going to follow them? Are you going to believe that they couldn't have gotten a better deal without a strike because of their own compromised position? I mean, Gary Jones, the president of UAW, really hasn't even appeared in public much around these negotiations. So what does that tell you? They're trying to keep him out of the picture. So that's kind of my case for why in the background and in the minds of UAW rank and file and the leadership, this investigation has to be a factor.
Dale, we appreciate you being on with us this morning. Thanks for your analysis, as always.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Dale Buss, a contributor at Chief Executive Magazine, Wall Street Journal, and Forbes. His latest at chiefexecutive.net.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everybody. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. Extreme weather has done a number on apple orchards around the Chicago area this year, even up into Wisconsin and into Michigan as well. We had hoped to bring you our conversation this morning with the Chicago Tribune reporter who had covered some of this. We're having a little trouble connecting. We'll tell you a little bit about the story, though, that we found in the Tribune that's a little concerning, especially if a trip to an apple orchard is part of your fall routine. Some of the winter weather, the late spring, even a fungus has caused lots of problems. The article details about how some of the orchards have even curtailed whether or not they're going to have a season this year and be open. And one of them has closed completely for the fall because of such a bad year. There was one orchard in Woodstock, about 65 miles northwest of Chicago, where the orchard there had such a bad year that they expect to run out of apples by the end of September, a month earlier than usual. I saw a story recently from Michigan where mainly the red varieties of apples had been extremely damaged by a hailstorm. So even after the rough spring and challenging early part of the season, the hail did a number on orchards as well. The upshot from the article is that if you're planning a trip to an orchard anytime soon, give a call to the orchard to make sure that they have the varieties that you're looking for, or even some stock at all. Some of the orchards have a number of different other events that they do with pumpkins and other hay rides and things, so you might be able to find something to do at the orchard. But if you're looking for apples, you might be out of luck. That now, we have to caution that it's not every orchard. There have been some orchards that this article talks about that did see a pretty decent recovery, and they do have apples in line. But whether it's in Indiana, in suburban Chicago, downstate Illinois, Wisconsin, or Michigan, trouble for the apple orchards this year because of some bad weather and even a fungus outbreak. So that story's at chicagotribune.com. You can find it, and we hope we can get Alexia back on with us, Ruiz from the Tribune, to have a conversation about this at some other later point. So we apologize for that this morning. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. The weekly crop condition reports issued yesterday afternoon by USDA showing very little change. Corn, for example, national numbers, good to excellent, 55%. Unchanged from a week ago. Wisconsin reported 64% good to excellent. Illinois, 41%. Indiana, 31%. And Iowa, 65%. Soybeans, nationally, 54% good to excellent, down a percentage point from a week ago. Wisconsin reporting 67% good to excellent, Illinois 42%, Indiana only 31%, and Iowa 63%. Trade talks with the deputy trade level people will get underway in Washington on Thursday. That, according to the Trade Representative's office today, paving the way for high-level talks in October aimed at resolving the trade war. A spokesman with the office did not offer any further details about the deputy-level talks. Trade yesterday, Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Lean hog futures climbed to their highest price since July, on hope and expectation that Chinese buying will come in to the U.S. pork market. Meat traders anticipate China will increase pork imports to offset the expected shortage caused by the African swine fever outbreak. We did see the December lean hog contract up $2.45 a hundredweight. And grain trade at the Chicago Board of Trade yesterday. Corn firmed as the oil rally offset the good crop weather in the U.S. Today is opening day of the Ohio Farm Science Review at London, Ohio. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now to check the business ticker for some more stories making business news this morning. A judge has dismissed a lawsuit seeking to eliminate creation of nearly $1.3 billion tax increment financing district to aid Chicago, a Chicago development. Creation of the district was pushed through the Chicago City Council during the waning days of former Mayor Emanuel's administration. However, a Cook County judge ruled yesterday the union-backed grassroots collaborative and Raise Your Hand Education Advocacy Group had no standing to challenge the district's creation. The two groups maintained the district violated the state's Civil Rights Act because it will deprive large minority, low-income areas of city revenue. The lawyers, Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, says the organization could still challenge the ruling. Creation of the district was sought by developer Sterling Bay to build infrastructure for a $6 billion mixed-use development along the Chicago River known as Lincoln Yards. The University of Chicago Medical Center is preparing for a possible nurses' strike on Friday. The hospital has moved some of the babies and children in the hospital's neonatal and pediatric intensive care unit to other hospitals. It has also stopped accepting new patient transfers and is rescheduling some elective surgeries and appointments. At least 2,200 nurses could walk off the job unless the union and hospital reach an agreement before Friday. Officials in Japan appear wary over the prospects for a trade deal with the U.S. after President Trump said he was prepared to sign a pact soon. Japan's chief government spokesperson says the two sides are still finalizing details after reaching a basic agreement in late August on trade in farm products, digital trade, and other industries. He says President Trump and the Prime Minister of Japan are considering signing a deal in late September when they attend the UN General Assembly meeting in New York. Purdue Pharma gets its day in court today after the OxyContin maker filed for bankruptcy protection and negotiated potential multi-billion dollar settlements to resolve thousands of lawsuits. An initial hearing will be held in federal court in New York for the Chapter 11 bankruptcy case. Purdue filed for bankruptcy protection late on Sunday, the first step in a plan it says would provide $10 billion to $12 billion to help reimburse state and local governments and clean up the damage done by powerful prescription painkillers and illegal opioids. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Tuesday, September the 17th. Industrial production and manufacturing production for August are due out today. Analysts are forecasting gains of 0.2% in both metrics. The report coming midday, the National Association of Home Builders Housing Market Index for September is also out today. Home building experts see the index softening slightly. The Federal Open Market Committee of the Federal Reserve begins its two-day meeting today with a likely rate announcement tomorrow. Also today on the earnings calendar, Chewy and FedEx are both reporting quarterly earnings after the markets close later today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, September the 17th.